I'm Kate.
And I'm Tolly.
And welcome to Wicked Within. This week we are back to our usually scheduled programming with another true crime episode.
I'm not sick this week, so that's nice.
That is nice. Yeah, it was a while.
It was bad. I sent Kate a video of like me talking while I was at work because I was afraid of sick time and stuff. And I sounded like death.
Mm-hmm.
Like actually.
Can confirm. Yeah. So she sounds great this week. Very normal.
Much better.
Hopefully the sound quality is coming through. All right. I don't have anything else. So without further ado, we are just going to dive right on in. Oh, also, no, I do have one more thing. There's a toddler in this house today. There's often a toddler in Neftali's background, but he's often going to sleep when we record. And today, he's had a nap, and it's still daylight outside, so he's very much awake. So if you hear weird sound effects or anything like that, it's the toddler. He's fine. He's having a great time. Just wanted to say that because we don't have a recording studio because we're poor. Anyway. All right. And now, without further ado, let's dive in. On Saturday, May 31st, 2014, Greg Steinberg was bicycling along Big Bend Road near his home in Waukesha, Wisconsin, when he stumbled upon a girl lying in the grass toward the end of the dead-end road.
Oh, I definitely thought he was going to be dead.
No, he's okay.
There's already a plot twist.
Yeah, Greg's actually great in this episode. Steinberg dropped his bike in the road and rushed to help the girl. With shaking hands, he took his phone from his pocket and dialed 911. Officer Dan Klein arrived at the scene just a couple of minutes later. He called out to the girl as he approached, introducing himself and asking if she was okay. As he got closer, the bloodstains on her clothes seemed to grow.
Uh-oh.
Officer Klein soon learned that the girl's name was Peyton Leitner, and when he asked who had hurt her, she told him that her friend, 11-year-old Morgan Geyser, had stabbed her with a knife. Yes. This is a wild case.
Whoa. Okay.
You may have heard of it because it's actually very well known, but I think that it is particularly well known for two things, which we will learn about very shortly. The one of them you already know. It's how young both Peyton and Morgan are. And another girl who we're going to meet very shortly. Before we learn more about the attack, we need to rewind so we can learn more about Peyton Morgan and another girl who came into their lives less than a year before the attack. Peyton Leitner was a hopeful, positive, and friendly preteen at the time of her attack. Peyton absolutely loved animals, and she tended to be the kind of person who saw the best in other people. In fourth grade, Peyton met another girl named Morgan. Morgan's mom, Angie, describes Morgan as a happy, intensely creative child with a vivid imagination. Now, Peyton was the kind of emotionally aware and socially responsible child that we absolutely love to see, so when Peyton noticed that Morgan didn't seem to have many friends, she decided to befriend the other girl because she didn't want her to be lonely.
Aww.
I know. Peyton is... I give her 100% on everything.
Yeah.
As the friends grew older, other children began bullying Morgan, but Peyton stayed by her side through it all. The bullying seemed to intensify in sixth grade, and Angie noticed that Morgan seemed to become moodier and more reclusive, but it didn't seem at all out of the ordinary for a preteen, so she just chalked it up to the usual tween angst. Angie became even less concerned when Morgan made yet another close friend. Anissa Wire moved to Waukesha and started attending school with Morgan and Peyton when all three girls were in sixth grade. Anissa's mom, Christy, describes her as an imaginative child who loved choir. Looking back, she realized that Anissa wasn't really invited to classmates' birthday parties or sleepovers, and it would later be revealed that Anissa had also faced substantial bullying, but she never confided in her parents, so they had no idea how much pain she was in.
Why were these kids getting bullied? Like, just normal... Let's just choose someone to dislike?
I think that both Morgan and Anissa were maybe a little bit quirky. And yes, I think that it didn't take much. I do feel like, you know, sixth grade does tend to be one of those times when people just start getting bullied for any perceived difference between them and their classmates. So.
No, that makes sense. I guess I would. Listen. This is a part of my life I'm a little ashamed about. But I was a little bit of a bully in sixth grade.
See?
So, And there wasn't any really good reason other than some other girl was like, I don't like her. So I was like, okay, well, now we all don't like her.
Okay. So, yeah.
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 Makes sense.
Yeah, it is an unfortunate phenomena at that age. So I think that that's kind of what was happening there. But Morgan knew all about being bullied, and soon the two girls were thick as thieves. They had so many shared experiences and interests that soon Peyton started to feel left out. Anissa and Morgan rode the same bus, so they had time to chat before and after school, and as they started to get interested in internet horror stories, they became even closer. Okay, so with that all in mind, we're going back to the scene of the crime. As Peyton, Greg Steinberg, and Officer Klein waited for emergency medical services, the two men did their best to comfort Peyton. In the 911 call, which you can hear in like documentaries on this case, you can hear Greg talking to the operator and then talking to Peyton, and he is so sweet. He's like, are you okay, sweetheart? Like, do you need water? He was just, that's why I also give Greg Steinberg 100%. Yeah.
Tens across the board.
Yep. When EMS arrived, they were shocked to discover multiple stab wounds all over the 12-year-old's body. Her blood pressure was dangerously low, and her heart was working overtime to keep blood pumping through her veins. Peyton's mom, Stacy, was notified and managed to make it to the hospital before Peyton was taken in for surgery. Stacy told Peyton that she would make it through this, but when the doctors told Stacy that Peyton had 19 stab wounds covering her arms, legs, chest, and abdomen, she couldn't stop the thread of doubt that started to weave its way through her mind. Before she was placed under anesthesia, Peyton managed to convey one more shocking revelation. Morgan wasn't the only girl who had been there during her attack earlier that morning. Anissa Wire had been there as well. Police immediately began searching for Morgan and Anissa. Morgan's mom, Angie, had no idea where her daughter could be. She thought that the three girls were still playing at the park, and she was shocked when police told her that Peyton had been attacked by her daughter. Similarly, Anissa's mom, Christy, had no idea where the two girls had gone. After the police left, she searched her home looking for any clues, and that's when she discovered Anissa's phone and an ominous note. Quote, "This is my final wish to those who care. Do not grieve my absence, but remember me for who I was. I love and cherish you and wouldn't do you harm."
That's very ominous.
Very ominous.
Also super deep for a 12-year-old.
That is what I was thinking too. I was like, those are words that I'm not sure that I was using in my everyday vocabulary.
No.
When I was 12. In fact, no, I know that I wasn't.
No.
And I didn't have a terrible vocabulary as a 12-year-old, but I wasn't using those words.
I was not poetic like that
no.
in any way, shape,
no.
or form.
No. Police were alarmed and believed that the girls may have been in danger. Searches continued until 3 p.m. that afternoon when a Waukesha officer found the girls sitting by the side of the freeway. Since police already had strong reason to believe that Morgan and Anissa played a role in the attack on Peyton, they were immediately separated upon their arrival at the police station. In the state of Wisconsin, children can be interrogated without the presence of their parents, guardians, or an attorney, so Morgan and Anissa were read their rights and then signed a waiver before speaking to officers. Okay. I am glad that you feel that way as well, because my immediate reaction to that was like, don't like that.
No.
No. No. In one of the documentaries that I watched on this case, Anissa's mom was stating, not super aggressively by any stretch of the imagination, but she was just kind of just stating some disappointment and mm-hmm. some frustration around the fact that 12-year-olds were allowed to just waive their rights to right. have their parents or guardian or an attorney in the room with them, and I would feel the same way.
Is there a minimum age that they are allowed to sign that waiver? Like 12 and older?
There probably is, and it probably depends on the state. I'm sure that some states, you know, allow you to talk to kids super young, and some kids you might have to be more like into the teen years and stuff like that. And I'm wondering if it has to do with the minimum age that you can be tried as an adult.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, and in a lot of states, that can be, like, you know, that could be as young as 7, and sometimes it can be, you know, more like 10, 12, whatever, but, yeah. You know, considering that both of them would have been around 12 at the time, probably that would have been above the minimum age requirement to have the possibility to be tried as an adult, so I wonder if that's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, I also just feel like they would have been really honest anyway, but I understand mm-hmm. that other people wouldn't have been as honest. I don't know. I have very mixed feelings mm-hmm. on this, but ultimately, I don't think that that's a particularly helpful policy to kids.
No.
Mm-mm. Nope. Anissa had a blood stain on her shirt and undershirt and immediately seemed scared, nervous, and concerned when she spoke to Detective Michelle Trussoni. But despite her fear, she immediately began to open up and soon revealed the catalyst for the unprovoked attack on Peyton earlier that day. She explained, quote, "There's this website called Creepypasta Wiki." And she went on to explain how she introduced Morgan to the story of Slender Man.
I knew this sounded familiar.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, I don't know how you say his name. Okay. In June of 2009, Eric Knudsen, anyway, Eric submitted 2 black and white photos to a contest where contestants were challenged to edit existing photos to include some kind of paranormal entity. Eric found photos with children, added a tall, thin, faceless creature in the background, and included a caption that said, quote, "One of 2 recovered photographs from the Sterling City Library blaze, notable for being taken the day which 14 children vanished and for what is referred to as the Slender Man. Deformities cited as film defects by officials." Fire at library occurred 1 week later. Actual photograph confiscated as evidence. 1986 photographer Mary Thomas missing since June 13th, 1986, unquote. All right. This caption was the only context provided, but the faceless entity soon took the internet by storm. And just as all good urban legends do, the Slender Man began to take on a life of his own. He had this odd duality where he can either be a killer or a protector. Some people would go out of their way to avoid him, and others might go out of their way to find him. Some people believe that creepypasta entities like Slender Man have proxies, who are servants or puppets.
Okay.
Yep. In December or January, Morgan suggested to Anissa that they should become proxies of Slender Man.
You get to just choose.
You do get to choose. You can be like, I would like to take the steps that are needed to become a proxy of whatever make-believe entity I'm particularly interested in right now. Anissa thought that sounded like a great idea, but she had no idea how to contact Slender, as one wouldn't, you know. So Morgan suggested, quote, "We have to kill Bella," which is Peyton. Yeah, because they had to prove themselves as worthy to Slender.
She must have had a lot of issues against Peyton for a minute, because that was very, very easy for her to do.
She really didn't have any issues with Peyton.
Why would that be your first person, then? Not the bully.
No.
Not an animal. Mm-hmm. Your best friend.
Yeah. So, we are going to go into that a little bit later, but basically it had to do with availability.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep, yep. And also, just to clarify, the reason that they call Peyton Bella is because when they were super young, like, I don't know, maybe, like, even so far back as kindergarten, there were 2 Peytons in class. And so Peyton Lightner was like, oh, well, my middle name or nickname or whatever is Bella, so you guys can call me that. Mm-hmm. And so in police interviews, they will refer to Peyton as Bella, but in everything that I've seen since then, she's going by Peyton again. So, I'm calling her Peyton. While Anissa was being interviewed by Detective Trussoni, Morgan was being interviewed by Detective Tom Casey. While Anissa seemed nervous and on edge throughout the interview, Morgan seemed calm and relaxed, despite the fact that she was at a police department and covered in blood. She's also pretty spacey, but can answer questions about times, dates, locations, etc. Morgan also claimed that Anissa was the one who said that they had to kill Peyton because he'd kill their families if they didn't. So two very different stories there.
Okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. When Detective Casey asked her about who was going to kill their families, she said, "A man. I didn't know him, but Anissa knew him." When he asked how Anissa knew him, she said, "I don't know. Anissa told me about him." And then she ultimately blamed Anissa for the whole plot. Detective Casey asked her, quote, "What were you trying to do with her when you stabbed her?" unquote. And she casually responded, "Kill her. I might as well just say it. We were trying to kill her." Detective Casey asked why they picked Peyton, and she responded, "I didn't pick her." Casey followed up asking who had picked Peyton, and Morgan said, "Whoever Anissa was talking about, she made it seem necessary." According to Morgan, Anissa told her that Slender would kill their families if they didn't kill Peyton.
Okay.
Uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh.
But Anissa said that Morgan suggested
killing Peyton.
Okay.
Yep, yep, yep. Yeah, so again, two very different things there, and we're going to go into even more detail. When all was said and done, there were three places that both Anissa's and Morgan's stories seemed to line up. First, this was all inspired by Slenderman. Second, they had to kill Peyton to appease Slenderman in some way, but for different motivations. And third, Morgan's birthday party would provide them with the perfect opportunity to sacrifice Peyton. For 6 months, Morgan and Anissa planned the perfect murder.
That's a long time.
It's a long time. It's a long time.
Very premeditated.
Yeah, there's no argument that this is not premeditated. So this is the plan. Morgan would invite both Peyton and Anissa over for a sleepover at her house. When the three of them went to bed, Morgan would keep headphones on and an alarm would wake her up in the middle of the night. Then they would tape Peyton's mouth shut, stab her in the throat, and run away. After they killed her, they planned to walk until they reached the 1.5 million acre Nicolet National Forest. They believed that Slenderman lived in a giant mansion in the middle of that forest, and they had to go find him after they made their sacrifice so that they could live with him forevermore. On Friday, May 30th, Peyton and Anissa went over to Morgan's house for a birthday sleepover. They went to Skateland, and then they came back to Morgan's house. Angie said that it seemed like a perfectly normal night. They played in the bedroom and ran up and down the stairs, giggling and having fun. There were no red flags. Everything seemed perfectly normal and innocent. When the alarm went off in the middle of the night, Morgan and Anissa decided that they were too sleepy and tired to go through with their original plan.
Same.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. The pair woke up at 5:30 the next morning, which has never been me at a sleepover, and went downstairs to play with Silly Putty until the rest of the house woke up.
That is insane.
Yeah.
Let me sleep.
Yeah, it is.
What is that internal alarm clock?
I don't know. Yeah. Peyton eventually joined them when she woke up and the girls had donuts and strawberries for breakfast.
Yum.
Yeah. After breakfast, the three girls played dress up, and when Peyton went into the bathroom to change into a pink princess dress, Morgan and Anissa started devising another plan.
Oh.
Morgan suggested that they could go to the park and kill Peyton in a bathroom stall where there was a drain in the ground for all the blood.
She has thought a lot about this.
Yeah, it's disturbing for a lot of reasons. So Morgan grabbed a sharp knife from the kitchen and the girls asked Angie if they could go walk to David's Park near her house. Normally, Angie would have gone with them, but Morgan was almost a teenager at that point and it was her birthday, so Angie let them go alone. Once they got to the park, Morgan and Anissa said that they needed to go to the bathroom. While there, Anissa hit Peyton in the head, forcing her head forcefully back into the concrete wall of the bathroom. She had hoped to knock her out, but it didn't work, and the girls lost their nerve yet again. You know, when the universe sends you signs, it's time to listen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, how did she hit her? Like,
I don't know. That part is really confusing to me because it seemed like it was like a deliberate like hit in the head. Like she like elbowed her in the head or like pushed her head back into the concrete wall. And I don't know why they just continued on business as usual after somebody tried to hit her or if she said it was an accident. I mean, Peyton kind of knew that Anissa didn't like her very much because Peyton was the original friend.
Yeah.
And Anissa was the one who came into the friendship with Morgan.
Yeah. But it was Anissa's beef with Peyton. Is that right? Because Peyton kind of felt left out once Anissa and Morgan got closer together.
Yes. So...
But Anissa was the one holding the beef because she was the original friend? Is that what I'm getting?
No, I don't know. It's unclear. I just think that Anissa and Morgan were so close. And, you know, I think, like, Peyton was, like, very sweet and very outgoing. And I don't think that she was bullied that much from what I understand. Whereas Anissa and Morgan were. Mm-hmm. And they were a little bit, like... quirky and all that kind of stuff. And I'm not entirely sure. I think that Peyton just didn't fit in with who they were becoming, I guess. Which does, again, that does tend to be the age where that happens. Yeah. Like, I didn't stay friends with my elementary school friends once we moved to middle school, which is partly because we all went to different middle schools. Yeah. But even if we hadn't, I'm not sure if we would have been close, like, post sixth grade because we were all just going every which way.
Yeah.
So, yeah. As they walked away from the bathroom, Peyton walked on ahead while Morgan and Anissa whispered to each other, trying to devise yet another plan. Anissa suggested taking Peyton into a wooded area at the end of Big Bend Road, so Morgan told them that she wanted to go play hide-and-seek, and Peyton happily followed along. Morgan later told...
Because she's concussed.
That might be. Well, and at that point, again, at your friend's, like, 12th birthday party, doesn't seem that weird that your friend would want to go into the woods and play hide and seek. I wouldn't think anything of that. I would be like, okay, we're moving on from that little episode that we had in the... Yeah. And Morgan isn't the one who hit her.
Yeah.
And it's Morgan's birthday. And I could see Peyton being such a nice person that she's like, well, I don't want to ruin Morgan's birthday by putting up a fuss, so I'm just going to go along. And now we're going to play a game, and it'll be fine. Mm-hmm. This is one of the many reasons, not because I'm worried about being, you know, stabbed repeatedly, but one of the many reasons that I don't believe in having trios of friends.
Oh, yeah.
Especially as girls.
Triangulation.
Really, really difficult to maintain a trio of friends
where
that's like your core group.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just somebody always feels left out, you know?
Yeah. Why did you make that face?
Yeah, because this quote from Morgan is gross. Morgan later told Detective Casey, quote, "People who trust you become very gullible, and it was sort of sad." Referring to Peyton just going into the woods and going to play hide-and-seek with them. Again, as a normal 12-year-old would.
She's like a sociopath. Like,
we're going to actually get in. She will be diagnosed with things.
There's a severe lack of empathy.
Yes. No, there is a severe lack of empathy. We're going to see that repeatedly throughout the episode.
Okay.
Morgan said that she wanted to count since it was her birthday. Anissa told Peyton to bury herself under the leaves scattered on the ground, and once Peyton was covered, Anissa started to walk away before she suddenly yelled, "Now." Mm-hmm. Morgan started stabbing. During her interrogation, she told Detective Casey, "It was weird. I felt no remorse. I thought I would. I actually felt nothing."
Morgan said that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yes.
Morgan suddenly stopped. And she and Anissa stared down at Peyton as she lay bleeding on the ground.
Was there screaming?
I assume so, but it was kind of a deserted area at the end of this dead-end road. It looked not necessarily, I wouldn't go so far as to say rural, but isolated more so than some other places would be. Morgan suddenly stopped, and she and Anissa just stared at Peyton as she lay bleeding on the ground. With tears in her eyes, Peyton told Morgan, "I trusted you. I hate you."
Aww.
Anissa told Peyton to lay down and be quiet so that she would lose blood slower, and then Morgan and Peyton told her that they were leaving her to go get help. But
sure
neither,
they were.
Yeah, but neither girl had any intention of doing anything to save their former friend.
So Morgan did all the stabbing.
That is correct. Morgan did all the stabbing.
Because I would imagine if there was a lot of screaming, because pain, stabbed multiple times, I'm positive would hurt. Morgan being the one who lacks empathy and has some sort of diagnosis that I have yet to discover.
Yes.
Would be the only one who could do it. I bet Anissa probably was way too, like, shooketh or scared.
Yes, I will go into it further later, but I do believe that that is true. I think that if this was Anissa's idea and she had been left to her own devices, I don't think anything permanent stabby-wise would have ever happened to Peyton, and that is my genuine opinion. Yeah.
Yeah.
No one knows exactly how long Peyton laid there in the grass bleeding on the leaves as her friends ran away in search of some fictional character. But eventually, Peyton somehow managed to stand up and stumble out of the wooded area. She collapsed in the grass on the side of Big Bend Road, where she was soon discovered by Greg Steinberg. She had been stabbed 19 times in total. One of those stab wounds punctured her liver, and another punctured her stomach. A stab wound to her chest would have pierced her heart if the knife had sunk even a millimeter deeper, and she would have died within minutes of the attack. But somehow, Peyton survived long enough to crawl from the trees and save herself. And she miraculously survived her injuries.
You know what I think happened?
Hmm.
Slender Man was like, not today.
No.
I'm going to protect and save this girl.
Yeah. He was like, today is not the day and you are not the ones.
Yeah.
Yep. Both Morgan and Anissa were remarkably open during their police interviews, but they told two different stories. In Anissa's version of events, both of them had contributed to the plan, but Morgan had been the actual attacker. In Morgan's version of events, almost everything could be blamed on Anissa. Anissa was the one who introduced the idea of Slender Man. Anissa was the one who said that they had to kill Peyton. Anissa was the mastermind, and Anissa also participated in the stabbing. But there were a few issues with Morgan's series of events that threw her whole story into doubt. First of all, Peyton survived her attack and was able to confirm that Morgan was the only girl who stabbed her friend on that day. Additionally, both girls' homes and school lockers were searched. Anissa had one singular Slender Man-related item in her locker, but police didn't find any other evidence of this Slender Man obsession either at school or at her home. On the other hand, Morgan's school locker revealed several notebooks filled with writing and drawings about Slender Man.
She was obsessed.
Yes. They found even more art and writing related to Slender Man stuffed into her drawers and closet at home, as well as numerous mutilated Barbie dolls with their legs or hands cut off.
Whoa.
Yeah, think Sid's nightmare collection of toys from Toy Story.
Who wrote the note? It was Anissa? The, like, way too deep for a 12-year-old?
That was Anissa, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because it also kind of seems on par for Morgan's morbidity.
Yes.
No.
Yes, it does. The family computer in Morgan's home also revealed a multitude of concerning searches, including how to get away with murder and what kind of insane am I?
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Based on this evidence and the difference in the stories and attitudes during the police interviews, the detectives on this case quickly decided that Morgan was likely the mastermind and Anissa was the follower, which I do agree with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
In the state of Wisconsin, certain crimes are always going to be treated as if the perpetrator is an adult if the perpetrator was over the age of 10 at the time the crime is committed. So that's what it is. Okay. Yep. Attempted murder is one of those crimes. There was some back and forth about either girl's ability to stand trial for this crime, considering it sounds unhinged,
yes.
Right? I mean, yeah. Like all of it. It's like that you are 12 years old. Well, 11 during 11, the planning. Yeah. For 6 months planning this. It was all over Slender Man, all this kind of stuff. There were a lot of things going on there. But both girls' defense teams would like to see them tried as juveniles, as you can imagine. That's always what you would want as a defense lawyer in that situation. But we're going to see what happens. In June of 2015, it was revealed that Morgan had been diagnosed with early onset schizophrenia. It is exceedingly rare for such severe schizophrenia symptoms to be demonstrated in someone as young as Morgan. However, Morgan's father, Matt Geyer, had a diagnosis of schizophrenia and had been hospitalized at least 3 or 4 times when he was 14 or 15 years old. So there was a family history of severe mental health struggles. Mm-hmm. And so that, like, detachment and everything that we see, very typical of somebody who's kind of experiencing severe schizophrenia. Huh. That, yeah, that level of detachment is very, like, textbook for that situation. Mm-hmm. In August of 2015, more than a year after the attack, Waukesha County Circuit Judge Michael Bowren, I think is how you say his name, ruled that both girls would be tried in adult court rather than juvenile court. So listen, I'm a big believer in rehabilitation when it's done right, especially for juvenile offenders. But if, in this particular case, if the girls had been tried as juveniles, they would have spent 2 years in juvenile detention at the most. Mm-hmm. And then they would have been released for community supervision until the age of 18. That doesn't feel secure enough to me, given the severity of the crime.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think given the planning and premeditation for the extent of time that they planned it,
mm-hmm.
plus the consistent desire to follow through with the change of plan.
Yes.
Trying them as adults was the right decision.
Yep. Yep. 100%. I am actually, in this case, glad that he didn't allow them to be tried in juvenile court, because I just don't think that that would have been the right choice in this case.
Mm-hmm. Not enough justice for the amount of effort they went through to kill somebody.
Right, exactly. And I'm not sure how much these juvenile detention centers are focused on, like, rehabilitation mm-hmm. in the way that Morgan and Anissa would need
right.
for them to be able to come out of prison and be successful.
Right.
We're going to go more right now into what did happen. So, in January, a civil judge approved a motion to send Morgan to a state mental hospital for treatment for her schizophrenia diagnosis. Again, great. I fully agree with that. And I'm not sure that that could have happened if mm-hmm. she had been tried as a juvenile.
Right.
She had reported hearing voices and said that she could communicate telepathically with Harry Potter and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, among many others. So, definitely a much-needed change of placement for her. In August of 2016, Morgan entered a plea of not guilty by reason of mental disease or defect, and Anissa followed suit just a month later in September.
Was Anissa diagnosed with anything?
I'm not sure. She definitely wasn't diagnosed with schizophrenia or anything like that. However, there was reason to believe, given, again, the severity, the planning, all that kind of stuff, that there was some psychological component that may have made, that may be a contributing factor in, there can be, like, temporary insanity. Mm-hmm. And so this might have been an argument for one of those situations. But we'll see. However, 11 months later, Anissa pled guilty on a lesser charge of attempted second-degree homicide.
Okay.
Yeah, which I'm fine with. After 11 hours of deliberation, the jury found her not guilty by reason of mental disease or defect, and the judge sentenced her to 25 years in a state mental hospital. Which seems...
Anissa or Morgan?
This is Anissa.
Okay.
Again, I'm all right with that.
25 years. But yeah, yeah. I mean, I would like to know a little bit more about what type of... Because she was not guilty of mental defect or insanity.
She was. The jury ruled her not guilty by reason of mental defect or disease.
Okay, got it. So, not guilty because of
mental... Which... Again, given her age and everything like that, does not feel inaccurate to me.
And she will get heavy dosage of treatment, counseling, therapy.
Yes, in a state mental hospital. Yes. Yep, 100%. I think that that was what she needed and feels very appropriate. Mm-hmm. So this ruling played a role in Morgan's trial as well. Morgan was obviously more mentally compromised than Anissa. So in February 2018, Morgan was committed to a state mental hospital for 40 years. People who have been committed to a state mental hospital have the option to file a petition for conditional release after they've served their minimum sentence. Anissa filed for release in March of 2021, and the judge approved that decision in July of that same year after hearing evidence from multiple mental health professionals and staff at the Winnebago Mental Health Institute. As part of Anissa's conditional release, she must live with her dad, Bill, for an unspecified period of time, and she will be monitored with a GPS tracking device at all times. Anissa's supervision will continue until she is 37 years old. Which, again, given all of these multiple mental health professionals, the staff at the state mental hospital that she was being housed at, and the fact that she will have to continue to have supervision until she's 37, and she was not, in my opinion, and from based on the evidence, the instigator or the attacker in this case, I truly think that that's going to be okay.
Yeah.
I don't feel unsafe knowing that she's out there.
Yeah.
And so I think that, that will be okay. In the questioning, Anissa said that she's actually so squeamish that she doesn't, that she didn't believe that she could stab anybody even if she wanted to. Again, that doesn't mean that she won't commit a crime, but just based off of the whole situation and stuff what I'm going to get into a little bit very shortly, I just don't think that this is, I'm just not that concerned about that. Morgan applied for release in May of 2023, but that petition was withdrawn in August. Her attorney plans to petition for release again in the spring of 2024, so we will see how that goes.
It was withdrawn by her and her attorney?
It was withdrawn by her, yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's
very soon.
It is. I feel a little bit less comfortable with that. I think that it can be really, really difficult for people who have schizophrenia. Some people are very vigilant about continuing their medication, like truly. And most people who have schizophrenia actually are not particularly violent people.
Right. Yeah.
But Morgan has a history of violence. And it is really difficult to ensure that somebody is continuing to take their medicine. I don't know if the state can basically compel you to continue with medication if you've been convicted of a crime and you are under supervision. So that would be a factor. But I am a little bit more concerned. I don't necessarily believe that if Morgan is making progress in her treatment and all that stuff, that she should be committed for that full 40-year sentence. But I'm also not surprised that she hasn't been released yet.
I think we can't be told what the treatment looks like. We can't be told the amount of counseling and medication and all of this stuff. But I know if I was a community member or even this person who's going to be supervising her, I would like to know how much rehabilitation she actually got in order to feel secure that she is going to be consistent about taking. And, like, I know some certain specialty courts or, like, mental health cases, you can add special conditions where you have to be compliant with your medication per a doctor.
Okay.
And that's how they hold them to that standard. But it's not like we dose them. Like, they have their own responsibility to take it, and it's hard to monitor that.
Yeah.
And, like, once they're off of it, we're like, chasing cats at that point. Like,
yeah.
And she obviously has very violent tendencies and lack of empathy and remorse. So that's more of my doubt of, like, her being out and her being truly held to that standard and being consistent for the medication. Like, I really wish that she would be, but
yeah. She has a better support system than I think a lot of people would, because her parents do seem so sweet, and her dad does have schizophrenia, and he is, I believe, medicated or at least treated in a way that he is functional in his daily life, which is, you know, huge. So there's a possibility that that could happen for her as well.
So she was very, very, like, mental, like, frontal lobe underdeveloped.
Yes.
She was like a preteen. Mm-hmm. And her dad didn't have his first hospitalization until, what, 14, 15?
Yeah.
And there's a significant developmental difference with that on its own.
Yeah.
So I think the fact that it started so young for her, she got convicted so young, she's been in this state hospital for such a long time, I just feel unsure of how the transition would go from state hospital to being out in the community, even with a strong support, like her dad going through similar experiences or having her parents, like, being very vigilant about the medication. Like, it's just such a stark difference.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Like, I would like to give her the benefit of the doubt that she would do well, but the younger they go in, the harder it is for them to transition, even without the layer of, like, mental illness that she had.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if life will ever look as normal for her.
Yeah.
As it might. Like, Anissa might go on to live normal life, and I can easily believe that.
Yeah, but Morgan is going to... confidence with her. Yeah. Morgan, I think, would... Not that she doesn't deserve to be out in the community.
Correct, yeah.
But I just think maybe a little more consistent... A little bit more time, like...
Yeah, and that's the thing. And she is still very young.
Yeah.
You know, in 2014, she had just turned 12. Yeah. You know, in May of that year.
What, 20?
Something, yeah.
And doesn't schizophrenia present in women later, like in their 20s? Is
that
schizophrenia? Am I thinking of a different...
Typically, schizophrenia starts to manifest itself between the late teens throughout the 20s, but it can also be earlier and it could also be later. Yeah. It's just that the typical period is between somewhere between, like 17 to 29.
So, like, she's in her early 20s, if not just turned 20. Like, she is so, so young, and there's still so much developmental going on in your brain.
Yeah.
Like, I just turned 30 and I still feel like, who let me adult?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know anything.
No.
Let alone at 20 with severe mental illness.
Yeah.
So I just feel like she just needs a little more time to cook.
Yeah.
Before being let out.
Yeah. I don't feel like it's being overly punitive at this point.
Right.
Yes, and that might be what her defense team decided back when they applied for provisional release and all that kind of stuff. So,
and obviously they take into opinion or consideration the opinion of the counselors working with them, because that's how
100
Anise got her early release.
Was it? Her supervised release.
So maybe they also thought, like, and I don't even think at this point it's, like, punitive. It's more, at this point, it's more her recovery and rehabilitation.
I agree. And I feel very comfortable with that. Even if she doesn't get out for a couple more years, she's still going to have a lot of life left to live when she does get out. And, again, I don't believe in doing it just to be punitive at this point, because she clearly is, and was especially at the time, very mentally ill. Without any sort of treatment. Mm-hmm. And, but at this point, again, it doesn't feel overly punitive to me.
It feels more rehabilitative at this point.
Yes, 100%. Peyton slept in her mom's bed for months after the attack. And in 2019, she said that she still slept with a pair of broken scissors hidden under the pillow next to her.
Oh, Peyton.
But all in all, Peyton has recovered remarkably well. She said, quote, "Without the whole situation, I wouldn't be who I am today." And she likes who she is. Peyton is attending university and has aspirations to eventually join the medical field so that she can help others, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So in this case, I think that something particularly when we're thinking about Anise's role in all of this, this very much seems like a folie à deux situation, which we talked about in full depth in episode 23 on the Pappen sisters. So if you want to learn more about it, you should go back and check out that episode. But we are going to look at kind of the situations and conditions in which Folio Dew is likely to become an issue. So first of all, 90% of all Folio Dew cases happen within families. So this situation is already a bit of an anomaly, but it can happen anytime two or more people have a close relationship and are cut off from the outside world and have delusional ideas and odd behaviors that transfer from one person to another.
Whoa.
So in this case, even though Morgana and Anissa weren't physically cut off from the outside world, they both seemed to exist in this tiny little bubble where the bullies couldn't get them and Slender Man could protect them.
Yep, that's exactly where my train of thought was.
Yep. I think it's pretty clear that they met the other criteria for Folio Dew, so now we're going to look at a couple of the subcategories of this particular condition. So, and now I don't know how to speak these words. Folia imposed psychosis, which is where a mentally healthy secondary partner begins to share the same delusions as a psychotic primary partner. In these cases, if the secondary partner is removed from the primary, their delusions will stop. And that seems to be like almost a perfect fit for this particular case. There can also be fully communicated psychosis, as I would say in English. And in this case, we also have a mentally healthy secondary partner and a psychotic primary. But in this particular instance, the psychotic primary communicates their delusions to the secondary. The secondary will resist for some time before taking on the delusions of the primary partner, but they also add their own delusions as well.
Interesting.
So I don't know. I don't know enough of the background and what that back and forth looked like between Morgan and Anissa to say if that was what was happening there, but one of those two really seems to be a fit for this case. Mm-hmm. I would have a really hard time believing that it's that this isn't Folio Dew in some capacity. So that is the case of the Slender Man stabbing.
Yeah.
And it's a really interesting case. I do want to, you know, just state for this episode, we talk a lot of times about like red flags, warning signs and stuff like that. And I do want to make it very clear that I genuinely do not believe that there were any obvious red flags in this case. I really think that Morgan's parents and Anissa's parents were super invested in their kids' lives. They really cared about them. They were available. They took care of them. They weren't abusive or anything like that. And unless you happened to overhear their conversations with one another, most of which happened, from what I understand, on the bus, I just don't think that there was any way that they could have seen it coming. No. And even if Morgan's parents were, like, on the lookout, you know, like, oh, you know, her dad, Matt, he has schizophrenia, so we should be aware of these signs for our kids. Morgan, I don't think, was outwardly displaying them, which, again, isn't that unusual for a long period of time with people who have schizophrenia. So they really didn't know.
Yeah. I think even if they stumbled upon conversation or searches of, like, the creepypasta Reddit forum, like, kids sometimes just are into weird shit. Like,
kids are creepy.
Yeah, the kids who...
They're weirdos.
Like, no hate, genuinely no hate, because you do you, but the kids who are into, like, the Paxson, Spencers, like, weird nightmare... I wouldn't even call it weird, but, like, more unique and unusual, like, Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
Or, like the little voodoo doll cartoon thing.
It's almost like a rite of passage.
Yeah, like, every... I think all of us had a minor period of time in that stage. Some more than others,
but
everyone had some period of time in that stage.
100%.
So, like, that would not be unusual to me. Like,
no.
Being into that kind of stuff is not a red flag. And I feel like some people might think, like, well, they were into the creepy... All of us were at some point.
Yeah.
That's not unusual to me.
No.
So it's, even if the parents saw that, me as a parent would be like, oh, it's your phase right now.
Yeah. I mean, which of us did not exchange urban legends, like at sleepovers or on the playground or something like that. It is so normal, especially at that age. Yeah. So again, I fully agree with you. And like creepypasta is very similar to like the urban legend of what you would experience today.
Yeah.
So yeah, I do think that this is just one of those really terrifying cases where you couldn't necessarily see this coming and no one did. And that I don't, and I really don't think that that's anyone's fault.
And very much an outlier for people with schizophrenia to pursue and follow through with that extent of violence.
100%. So it definitely is.
Definitely don't want to put out that misinformation that people with schizophrenia are violent people, because that's not always the case. It's rare.
Yeah.
And this was one of those rare times.
Yep, 100%. And it might not have even been the case if this wasn't the way that her mental illness was manifesting itself in this particular time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Anyway, all the best wishes to Peyton, who seems like an amazing person, seems really confident. I really do think that she has an amazing support system. A lot of credit has been given to her mom, and I think that Stacy deserves that credit. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, that is this week's episode, and next week we will be back with another true crime case, and it will be our 100th episode, so all very exciting.
So exciting.
All right, and until next time, bye.
Bye.
If you liked the show, please leave us a great review, and don't forget to subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Wicked Within Podcast.